Well, it's good to have everyone here this evening. For those of you who are new, my name is Rick Taylor, and I'll be teaching this class this semester for the most part. Also, Jeff Doolittle back here in the back will be teaching a couple of sessions as well. We're going to be going through the developing a biblical worldview this semester, and I'll tell you more about that in just a second. But I hope you had a good holiday. I hope the Christmas break was good for you, and let's pray and we'll get started. Father, thank you so much that you have given us so much, so generously, so sacrificially. You've thought about us, cared about us, and we appreciate that. Thanks for the freedom that we have, that we take for granted so often, to gather together here, to be able to talk about you and your word and the things that you've taught us there so freely. We thank you for that privilege that's so graciously given. God, I pray that you would use, not only tonight, but use this entire semester to rack our brains a little bit, to make us think about things differently maybe than we have before, to go deeper in some areas than we've ever gone before, but mainly just to think differently, have a different perspective on life. And I pray that it would be more and more like your perspective, that we'd be able to see this world more through your eyes by the end of this semester than ever before. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. Well, it's good to have everyone here, and we want to get going. You have a notebook. I need you to open it up. And the very first page you come to in your notebook with all those color things on them, colors to them, just are the main thing there is the topic, and the number is the tab number for that particular week. Now, if you'll flip it over one page, you'll come to a class description. And I'm going to talk more about that in just a second, but there's a class description, and then there is homework. We are going in the class description there. Just look in the center of that where it talks about these six questions. Those are the six questions we're going to address this entire semester. We're going to talk about creation, or where did we come from? We're going to talk about mission. Why are we here? We're going to talk about evil. What is it, and where did it come from? We're going to talk about liberation, what can be done about evil. We're going to talk about transformation, how do we change? And we're going to talk about mortality, how does death relate to life? Those are our six primary questions that people around the world have been asking since near the beginning of time. I don't think Adam and Eve probably asked the first one, but not too long after them, all of these questions have come into play, and they have been asked by humanity for thousands of years. We're going to try to answer them this semester, and we're going to spend 2 weeks on each question. The first week we spend on them, starting next week, we're going to look at where did we come from, the whole area of creation, or where did we come from? We're going to answer that question from the vantage point of how have philosophers, or another way of putting that, how have the influencers in our world today been answering that question, mainly since the time of Plato, so just before, about 400 years before the time of Christ. How have these influencers been working to affect the world we live in today to answer that question? Then we're going to spend the second week, 2 weeks from now, answering that same question. How does the Bible answer that question? And what we want to do in those 2 weeks of classes is to put what the world is saying, and we hear all the time, and what the Bible says up next to each other. What do they look like? How closely do we really understand what the Bible says, and how much have we bought into what the world says? And are we going to be able, are they just sort of mixed up, or are we going to see with real clarity at the end of each 2 week period how God answers that question in the Bible? And I think you will be surprised. This is the one semester out of all six semesters of Academy that I have over the years heard more and more people talk about the change that took place in their perspective, They saw things differently. If I had people come up to me and say, I can never read the paper, watch the news, read a magazine, watch a TV show, watch a movie the same way again. Rick, you've messed my life up. I don't like that. But it is amazing when we look more clearly at what the influencers have said and the world has bought into and what the Bible says, and we start seeing those sharp distinctions, it makes us have to move in this direction more or realize I'm stuck and I'm no different than the rest of the world. So we'll look at each of those questions that way. Now, at the bottom, if you'll look at the last two short paragraphs under homework, it says, in addition to the homework above, a chapter from the book Total Truth by Nancy Piercy will be suggested each week for those choosing this supplemental reading. Please see the weekly assignment sheet for these assignments. And I'll show you that in just a minute. But we are not going to discuss the book, that Total Truth by Nancy Piercy, very often in here. Occasionally I'll make reference to it. But it's something that will supplement and correlate with what we're going through here, correspond to what we're going through. Not week by week, but you'll see a lot of the same kinds of things, and it'll be a reinforcement for you if you want further reading that will be helpful to you. It's suggested, it's not demanded. I would encourage you to consider at least getting the book. And you might find that there are some chapters in there as we go through this, even if you don't read the whole thing, that are helpful to you. Now look at the last paragraph. A short paper. Some of you just said, okay, this class is over. Okay? I didn't say a short test, a short paper. Here's what I want you to do. And you can do this as we go. I'm not worried about your grammar and syntax. I'm not worried about your spelling. What I want you to do is to summarize in a paragraph or so what you believe the answer is to each one of these questions as we go through them. So that's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to write out the question and then to summarize, here's how I believe that question should be answered. Okay? It's an open book thing. You can look at any resources that you want. You can do whatever you want. But I'd like you to go through the process of saying, this is what I believe about where did we come from. This is what I believe about why are we here. I find that it's really helpful to have to articulate that in some form or fashion. And I would say, just go tell somebody, but there's no accountability in that. And I've had people tell me, just go tell somebody what it is. And I say, yeah, I'll get around to that someday. But I want you to turn it in, okay? And I will not give it back. So make a copy of it. If you want to keep a copy of it, just hand it in, and we'll keep a record of that. This class, if you are familiar with the anatomy of a disciple, that whole concept, this book, this particular class is going to help us be more biblically formed in these areas that we're talking about, to have a more biblical perspective in our minds about these things. And there are two areas, one quadrant that it's going to particularly help us with as well in our choices and our compassions. It's going to help us be more morally discerning. It's going to help us be able to discern between what the world says and what God says in making choices at times. And it's also, therefore, going to help us be more culturally engaged in a meaningful, significant way. I wish it would get rid of the fly flying around my head, but it won't do that. So anyway. Okay, on the next page, your schedule. Goodness, this fly. You will see the six issues, the six questions that we're going to deal with. In there, and you'll notice under each one the 2 weeks and what the dates are. That's when we're going to cover them. So next week, January 27th, we're going to be looking at that question of where did we come from, creation, from alternate worldviews. I'll talk about what that means in a minute, but what is the rest of the world saying about that? And then on February 3rd, creation from a biblical worldview perspective. How does the Bible answer that question? Now that's the schedule all the way through. Okay, you'll notice April 14th, We're taking a spring break week, so you'll have that week off. And the last week, April 28th, there's a review, and where do I go from here? And in that last week, I will go through and summarize all of this for the whole semester, okay? So bring your hearing aids, bring your fast-writing hands and all that, because we're going to cover a lot of material that last night, trying to summarize all of this and draw some comparisons and contrasts to things that we've been learning this semester. Any questions about that at all? Okay, you'll also notice, is it the next page? I think it is. The next page, it says, well, that looks just like we looked at, sort of, but it sort of is. These are the weekly assignments. What I want you to do is to read the materials behind, in January 27th, Creation from Alternate Worldviews. Open up tab 2 in your notebook, and you will see some materials there. That's what I want you to read for next week. Start reading that, okay? And if you want to read Total Truth, I'm recommending that you read the introduction in chapter 1. If you want to follow along, you can get Total Truth on Amazon. You can get it at local bookstores. You can order it there. Whatever you want to do, it's an excellent book. Nancy Piercy is an accomplished thinker and writer. She's one of the few people that I read that I am amazed at not only how broad she's able to deal with subjects, everything from philosophy to biology, et cetera, et cetera. She deals with a breadth of issues, and she goes deeper than most people who are broad in their perspective of things. So I really appreciate her. That's one of the reasons I'm recommending this book to you, because she will make you think outside of some boxes you may have gotten into thinking about. Okay, so that just tells you what the assignment for each week is, and if you want to read Total Truth, that's where you can see that as well. Now then, if you'll turn to tab 1, you'll have an introduction and overview. That's what we want to cover the rest of this evening. Any questions at all about anything I've covered so far? Anything at all? Okay, let's move on. What can we expect in this class? You've heard it said that the greatest enemy we can have is the one we do not see. I'd like to, I think that's true in many ways, but I'd like to adjust that just a little bit. I think maybe the greatest enemy we have is the one we see every day, but because we see it every day, we've lost sight of how far off base it is, that it's really an enemy, because we get so accustomed to it. And that's what happens in our world. There's one thing about living life. It's so daily. You know, every day we go through another day of stuff that we do. We're either going to work, or we got activities we're doing, or we're going to school, or whatever the case may be, and we get up and we go through our routines and we live the daily living of our life. We see a lot of the same things. We hear a lot of the same things over and over again, and we don't realize how much of an impact they're having on us. I hope this semester some of that will come awake for us. We'll be able to say, whoa, wait a minute. I was driving here this evening, and I saw a bumper sticker. And when I first read the first part of it, I thought, that's good. It said, be holy. And then it said, dot, 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 or die trying. That's interesting. And a lot of people, I'm sure, look at that and say, that's really good. A lot of Christians probably look at that. That's really good. I'm not so sure. And it makes me, the stuff we're going to be studying in here this semester makes me look at things I see, look at things I see and hear things that I hear, listen to things I hear, in a different light. It makes me more discerning about things than I ever was before I started doing this. So the purpose of this class, there in your notes, is to help each one of us see our life, the life that we live, the daily life that we live, more clearly from God's perspective. To see the things we encounter in this life more clearly from God's perspective. How many of you are on Facebook or Twitter? Quite a few of you. It's amazing to me how often I see people asking questions that they want you to respond to, or they'll make a statement or a paragraph in Facebook. They'll write a whole paragraph of what they believe about something, and then what do you think? And I used to think, this is fun. This is exciting. I like to respond to those kind of things, and I realized over and over again that people really didn't want to hear what I had to say. They just wanted me to like it or something like that, to say yeah, or retweet it to somebody else. But they really didn't want to hear what I had to say. So I hope one of the purposes of this class is to make you unpopular on Facebook when you went, no, that's not true, not true. So in order to do that, the thing that we're trying to do is to hold up again the secular worldview that we are constantly being, that's being thrown in our face over and over again, versus a biblical worldview. And I want us to see the differences, the distinctions between them clearer than ever. That's the purpose of this class as we go through our daily life. The focus of the class is going to be on how did God design life to be lived and what is his perspective on that. So I want us to see that. You remember hearing, I'm sure many of you have, the way that you can tell a counterfeit bill? You know how they train people to spot counterfeit bills? Somebody, you've heard of this. What do they do? Yeah, they study the real thing so closely that anything that's different than that will stand out when they look at a counterfeit. They can look at it, they can see, they look for different things, and it stands out. They don't study counterfeit bills. Say, here are 16 different varieties. Now, you get to know all these. No, they study the real thing, and the counterfeits will stand out by comparison. That's part of what we want to do. That's what we're going to focus on in this class is, what does God says, what is God, how has God answered these questions? What's the real thing? And we will begin to see some of the differences in the worldviews around us, some of the counterfeits for that. Because there's not a worldview out there that isn't partly right. Right? I mean, really. There's not a worldview out there that's not at least partly right, or nobody would buy into it. If it was all totally off base, everybody would throw it out and say, no, that can't be. But there's enough truth in every worldview that's right that makes it enticing. Well, how can we spot what's right about it and what's wrong about it and not buy into the whole thing just because part of it's right? Romans chapter 12, verse 2, the focus of this class, just might want to write that down. Romans 12, 2. Do not be conformed to this world. Don't allow yourself to be molded into the mold of this world, but be transformed. It's in the Greek, it's the word we get our word metamorphosis from, to have a changing experience, something that changes us from the inside out. But be metamorphized, be transformed in your life. Don't be molded by the world, but you need to be transformed. That means the Bible is assuming we are already, when we read that, somewhat formed by the world, molded by the world around us. We're already there. If we need to be transformed, something's got to change. Something needs to change, right? Be transformed how? By the renewing of your mind. So we're going to look at, again, I know you're getting tired of hearing this, but we're going to look at what is the mold of the world we keep hearing that has molded us in many ways, and how can our minds be transform us? How can we change our minds, our perspective from a biblical point of view, so that we will be transformed. I've already talked about the flow of this class. We'll spend 2 weeks on each one of those. We're going to have an introduction week. We'll have 12 weeks dealing with those six questions. And then we'll have a wrap-up week. That's the flow of this class. The foundation of this class. You might want to write this down underneath that box there. God has revealed himself to every human being, and every human being has responded to that revelation. So I am assuming this to be true, that every human being, God has revealed himself to every human being, and every human being has responded to that revelation. Now, where do I get that? God has revealed himself. First of all, let's look at the first part of that. You might write down Genesis 1, 26 to 27. In fact, if you have your Bible, just turn there. Let's just look at that real quick. For some of you who've been in this class for a while, this will be going back over a little bit of ground we've already turned up, but let's look at it again. Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and 27. This is on the sixth day of creation. It talks about God telling the earth to bring forth cattle and all of that. And then it says in verse 26, "Then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds in the sky, of the sky, and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." God created man in his own what? Image. In the what? Image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. In the beginning, God created mankind. He created the world and everything, but he created man in his own image. The word image means the physical representation of a greater reality. In this case, God. The word is most often translated in the Old Testament, the word idol. What is an idol? A little wooden thing that someone would worship. Well, it's something that has been shaped by man into a certain form. Is that the God? No, but it's a physical representation of a greater God that they supposedly worship. God is saying, that's what I made you. God created mankind in his image to be a physical representation for others to see of what he is like. We are a physical representation of God. He created us in his image. It goes on and it says, in his likeness, in his form. We look like him. Now, wait a minute. God is spirit. How can we look like him? You know, there are times when we will talk about Jesus, and we'll say Jesus took on a human form and came to be among us, and that is true. But what if Jesus has always had that form? And we were created to look like him. Because that's what the word likeness means. We were created after his mold. That's the design that we have. We're created to be an image of God, a physical representation of God, and we are in his form, in his likeness. Now, turn to Psalm 19, verses 1 to 6. So tell me again, as we're reading through this, how has God revealed himself? God has revealed himself in us, our physical form, a physical representation of him, a form of him, and everything we just looked at. Now look at these 1 through 6 and answer the question, how has God revealed himself? The heavens are telling of the glory of God, and their expanse is declaring the work of his hands. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night reveals knowledge. There is no speech, and there are no words. Their voice is not heard. Their line has gone out through all the earth, and their utterances to the end of the world. In them he has placed a tent for the sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber. It rejoices as a strong man to run his course. Its rising is from one end of the heavens, and its circuit is to the other end of them, and there is nothing hidden from its heat. Tell me, how does David, the psalmist here, say that God has revealed himself? In his creation, in what he has created. He says, it's shouting to us. The heavens are declaring to us, are shouting to us, the glory of God. The word glory again means the visible fullness of something. The heavens are declaring to us the visible fullness of who God is. It's showing us. It's demonstrating to us who God is. That's what it's doing. Notice in verses 7 through 14, I'm not going to read all of it. Just follow along a few verses and tell me how else has God revealed himself to mankind. The law of the Lord is perfect, restoring the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true. They are righteous altogether. They are more desirable than gold, yes, than much fine gold. How has God revealed himself? Another way that God has revealed himself to mankind, through his word, okay? He has given us his word. Now, you can say, now, not everybody in the world has this word. That is true. But everybody in the world has creation. Everybody in the world was created in the image of God, in the likeness of God that we've looked at so far. But he has revealed himself in his word to many people as well. Now then, look at, don't turn there, but in John 1, chapter 9, it says this, Jesus came into the world and enlightened every man. And we could see other places where Jesus is God in the flesh who has come among us. We can learn something about God from Jesus as well. Now then, turn to Romans chapter 1, verse 18. Just read with me through 18 through 20. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because, he's giving us reason why God's wrath is doing that, because that which is known about God is evident where? Within them. God has made himself known within who? Mankind. If you are human, God has made himself known within us as human beings. For God made it evident to them. Look at verse 20. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through that which was made, so that they are without excuse. How has God revealed, according to Romans 1, 18 to 20, how has God revealed himself? Within every person. And again in his creation, Psalm 19 once again, he's revealed himself to all people. God has revealed himself to everyone in the world for all time. The question becomes, how do we respond? Number two in your notes there, mankind responds to God's revelation. How do we respond? Look at verse 21 through 23. For even though they knew God, They did not honor him as God or give thanks. But they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory, the visible fullness of the incorruptible God, for the image in the form of a corruptible man. What did they trade? They traded the image of God that we were created in for the image of man. Interesting. That's how mankind has responded. Mankind has distorted, messed up the image of God in so many ways. A number of years ago, my family had three little bitty boys, and we were on a long trip, and we came into, what's the name of the mountain range in Idaho, Montana, Tetons, we came into Grand Teton National Forest, just south of the big park that are Yellowstone that everyone's familiar with, just south of there, and we came to a little bitty lake. We were camping. We got in late at night. I remember gathering some wood that night and putting it underneath the van where it was still warm so that that wood would dry out enough that we could have a fire in the morning. Got up early the next morning before the three little boys and Judy got up and got the wood and made a fire. But when I stepped outside of that van, we were on Coulter Bay, it was called, still is, Coulter Bay, stood there, and I was in amazement. I had never seen the Grand Tetons before. This was in June. It was the first day that that park was open after the winter, and the snow was still totally covering the Grand Teton Mountains. They just spiked up out of the earth, totally snow-covered. I was awestruck. I just stood there. I went back in the van, got a camera, and I took a picture. Took a picture of a little bit of Coulter Bay and the Grand Tetons. This is great. When we went back home, something strange happened that many of you have no idea what I'm going to talk about. But Judy took the film and took it down and got it developed. Long before digital cameras and all of that, but took film down to have it developed. And I came home one day and she said, "Rick, we got the pictures back from our trip. They are fantastic." And so we were going through them. She says, "By the way, there was one that was a little weird. And I don't know what happened to the camera, but it's a picture you must have taken because I don't remember taking it." And I said, "What is it?" She said, "It's when we're in the Grand Teton National Forest. And you took a picture of the Tetons." But she said, "Rick, there's one picture, the picture's sort of two ways. It's got the Tetons upright and then the Tetons upside down." And what had happened was when I took a picture trying to get Coulter Bay in it, I didn't get any of the banks of Coulter Bay in there. And it was just like glass. And so we saw this mirror image of God. Okay? We saw this mirror image of his creation, the mountains there, this mirror image. That's how God created us, is to be an image of him, to be a reflection of him, to be a physical representation of him on planet Earth. Going back to the Tetons when we were there, later that day I took the boys out fishing in a little boat I rented there on Coulter Bay, a little putt-putt boat. We go out there, this motor's barely getting us out there. And I did what all dads of little bitty boys do. I did not fish, okay? I dodged lines as they were flying around. I untangled line. I did all this kind of stuff, but I did not get to fish. But there was a moment, I think for about 3 seconds, when I was able to just pause while they all had their lines in the water. It's one of those good moments. And they all had their line in the water. And I look, and there's the Tetons again. But I noticed this time that our little boat was creating ripples on the lake. And it wasn't this mirror reflection anymore of the Tetons. It was distorted. And mankind have said, I would rather have the distorted than the mirror image. I don't want to look just like God. I want to look like the rest of people. People. Mankind. That's what I want to look like. You know what? Because of that, mankind has been formed into the image of the world around it. That's what we have experienced. We don't like that. I remember reading these passages and saying, no, not me. That's not me. But I tell you, the more I've studied this stuff that we're going to be looking at this semester, the more I realize how much my life was and still is in many ways formed by the world around me rather than God and his truth found in the Word. And I need to be constantly growing and understanding what this says because the world doesn't stop molding me into its image. Every day, we are hearing and seeing things that are trying to shape us into the image of the world. God has revealed himself to everyone in his very creation and design of us. He has revealed himself to everyone in his creation around us, where we can see the art, the artist in the art around us, so to speak. He has revealed himself within all of us. For some, he has revealed himself through Jesus Christ and the Word of God as well. But everyone has been given that revelation. But mankind has responded to that in different ways. I was on a vacation a number of years ago and had the opportunity. Went out golfing that one day on this vacation and met a man named George. George was 80 years old at the time. It was a few years ago. And George and I was there for 2 weeks at this place. And part of the perks that came with where I stayed was I could play golf anytime I wanted for free. So I went out probably every other day and played golf. And George was out there every time. In fact, after the first couple times, George would say, when are you coming back? And I'd say, oh, in a couple days. He said, what time? And I'd tell him, and he'd meet me out there, and we'd go around this golf course together, and we'd play. We got to know each other in those couple of weeks, and near the end of that time, George said to me, Rick, I'm 80 years old. I'm going to die one of these days. It scares me to death. I'll never forget those words. It scares me to death that I'm going to die. And George was Jewish by background, tradition. And I asked George a little bit about that. And we talked more and more about it. And I took him to his Old Testament to give him hope that this isn't it. This isn't all that there is, even though his theology that he had been brought up had told him that this is all there is. And by the end of that time, George said to me, Rick, everything you say from my own Bible seems to be true. But I've just lived my life way too long believing this is all there is, so I'm just going to go with that. The next year, I went back to that same place for a week, Judy and I did. And I got there, and the day I got there, there was a helicopter that had come in to halt, to take George to a hospital. He'd had a heart attack, and George did not live from that and everything. I'll never forget George. He heard about God. He believed in God. He heard from God's own words, hope that this isn't all there is. But George said, no, what he was saying to me basically is, I've heard what the world has had to say for 80 years. And I'd just soon stay with that. I don't want that for any of us at all. I don't want that at all. We could break the responses of us as mankind into six primary kinds of responses. Don't get this confused with the six questions we're going to be looking at. There are six basic kinds of responses that mankind has had to the revelation of God that all of us have throughout the world. The first one is there on the bottom of page one. It's a personal theistic relationship. A personal theistic relationship. This basically means it's a pure, and I'm talking about this from a pure biblical perspective of God and His design for life. There have been some that have responded that way, that they have looked at what they have looked at that revelation and they responded the way God says we ought to respond to that kind of revelation appropriately. And they've done it biblically, so to speak, a pure biblical picture of God and His design for life. Now then, let's look at the next page. Page two, because we're going to see the other five primary ways that the world has responded. All of these are alternate worldviews. All of these are distortions, ripples in the water, if you will, of God's pure design for us and how we ought to respond to Him. The first one is a personal theistic substitute. Now, I want you to write some things down under this. First of all, underneath that, some of you are going to say, Rick, this is getting way too deep. I promise you, you won't feel that way by the last class. No, but by as we go through, I promise you, some of this will make more sense. I'm using some big words, but we'll break them down as we go through. Under a personal theistic substitute, I want you to write down two things. First of all, finite godism. Finite, F-I-N-I-T-E, godism. I'll define that in a minute. And underneath that, I want you to write deism, D-E-I-S-M, deism. Finite godism and deism, this particular substitute for the real proper response might ask questions like, where is God when I need Him? God, why weren't you there when I needed you? That sort of thing. Why doesn't God respond to my prayers? We might find people saying things like this who believe in that. Jesus was a great teacher, a great example of morality, of how we ought to live life in terms of morality. We might hear someone saying something like, our unalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Oops. But that comes from this particular worldview, straight out of their literature. We'll look at that as we go through it. I want to tell you, there are going to be some things in here that challenge some of you, as they did me. I am an American. And I am glad I am an American and all of that. I do not believe we live in a perfect country. And I believe we need to look at our country with open eyes at times. So as we go through this semester, you are going to read some things by our country's forefathers that you've read many times or heard many times. But now all of a sudden you're going to read them and say, wait a minute, he's quoting this person who had this worldview. And our Constitution, our Declaration of Independence, our Bill of Rights are full of language, some of which is biblical, the first view we just looked at, some of which is not. And we're going to look at that for what it is. Not what we want it to be or whatever, but what it is as we go through it. I'm not trying to be un-American in doing that. I just want to look at it honestly. As much as I'm an American, first and foremost, I'm a child of God. And that transcends national boundaries. Thirdly, the third view response to God is this, an impersonal theistic substitute. The first one was a personal theistic. This is an impersonal theistic substitute for God. I want you to write two words under that. First one is pantheism. These will be the last time you ever have to write these words. Pantheism, P-A-N-T-H-E-I-S-M. And the second one is this, panentheism, P-A-N-E-N-T-H-E-I-S-M. Pantheism and panentheism. Pantheism in many ways today is also called naturalism at times. Basically, pantheism or naturalism is saying that the sum is equal to or greater than all the parts of the universe. That God is the sum of all of the parts of the universe, but when you put them all together, it makes God greater than it would be if you just had the collection of all the parts. God is greater than the sum of all the parts. So, that table you're sitting in is part of who God is. You are part of who God is. The carpet your feet are on, the shoes on your feet that's touching that carpet are part of who God is. Everything that exists is part of who God is. That's what panentheism is. And naturalism has sort of hijacked some of that, and we'll look at that as we go through here. Panentheism is a little bit different. Panentheism says God is in everything in the universe. So there's a little bit of God in you, a little bit of God in that table, a little bit of God in the chair, the carpet, your shoes, a little bit of God in everything. God, this universe, some would say in some of their literature that you'll read, God, his body is this physical universe, and that sort of thing, but he is the soul of the universe that makes it all happen. A person who believes in this or who has responded to God this way might be found saying something like, may the force be with you. Okay? We will look at Star Wars. I love the Star Wars shows. I tell you, I've had people come up to me after these first class before and say, okay, Rick, you don't like anything I like. That's not true. I like America. I like Star Wars, okay? But George Lucas wrote Star Wars. The original Star Wars movie was created by his own words to show young men and women in America that Eastern religion, that pantheism, was really okay. Okay? And may the force be with you is in the dark side and the bright side or the good side that exists. All of that is taken from this particular worldview, alternate worldview that responds to God in a different way than what we were designed to. This view you will have people saying everything in the world is equally sacred. So, for instance, when I lived in Oregon, I'll never forget them doing in a school district, they gave a series of questions, ethical questions, to fourth and fifth graders in this whole school district. And then they tallied the results in the paper, some of them anyway. 80% of the children who took that test said that they felt like if they had to choose between saving a baby whale and saving a baby, 80% of them said they'd go with a baby whale. Okay? 80% of them said they would rather save a tree than save a baby. 80% of them. Everything in this world is equally sacred, this view says. Equally important. Have you not heard that? Have you not seen that? Have you not believed that to certain extents at times? Everything is equally sacred, equally valuable. Well, if God is the sum of everything, or if everything is his body, then that makes sense. Yeah, it's all God. So it's all equally valued and that sort of thing. Now then, let's look at a compromising dualistic substitute. This is the heaviest we're going to get tonight, these few views right here. So I want you to write underneath a compromising dualistic substitute, Platonism or Platoism. It's referred to both ways. Plato, P-L-A-T-O, I-S-M, or P-L-A-T-O-N-I-S-M. It's making reference back to Plato, who was the student of Socrates, who was the master or the mentor of Aristotle. We have very little written by Socrates. Most of what we know about Socrates is from the prolific writings of Plato. You'll have the opportunity to read Plato this semester and find out for yourself, straight from the horse's mouth. We're not going to use any second-hand sources. We're going to read straight from the horse's mouth things that have influenced this world that we're in today. You'll have an opportunity to read something by him. Plato taught that there were two realities, that everything in this world, everything in this material world, so everything we've talked about, our physical bodies, the carpet, the shoes, the tables, everything you can see, touch, that sort of thing, taste, everything in the material world is evil. And it has been for all eternity. And it will be for all eternity. He says the immaterial world, the world of thought, reason, logic, knowledge, is good. It always has been. It always will be. Eternally good in the past and into the future. Always, eternally. No end. No beginning, no end. It's always been that way, always will be that way. The interesting thing about this view of Socrates and Plato and Aristotle that Plato popularized is that it created what is called, and if you read Nancy Piercy's book, you'll see this very clearly, what's called dualism, that we live in two different worlds. We live in the material world and we live in the thought world. Well, that has been going on, that teaching has been going on since 400 BC, and it was proliferated throughout the known world by the Greeks. Alexander the Great, you know who his mentor was? Aristotle, who was a student of Plato. And Alexander the Great conquered the known world at that time, instituted the Greek language and Platonic philosophy. Even in the time of Christ, what was the language that was the predominant language in Israel where Jesus grew up? Was it Hebrew? Yeah, they spoke Hebrew. But what was the common language? Greek. Why? When the Romans conquered the world after this, what was the predominant language in the Roman Empire? Greek, not Italian. Not Latin, Greek, because they were the educators of the world of that day, and it still has an impact on us today in the Western world particularly. So people got comfortable with this two-world, two-realities kind of thing, and so now then today you'll hear a businessman who gets caught or asked about, why did you cheat? Why did you lie to me? Hey, it's just business. As if somehow there's a world of business and there's a world of the personal life. It's not personal, it's just business. Two worlds. Or the person who goes to church regularly on Sunday or goes to any institution of faith on a regular basis and is a practicing person of faith in their, and then they'll go to work or they'll go to school. They'll cheat on the exam. They'll lie to their boss. They'll lie on a report because they're comfortable living in two different worlds. That is one of these responses. You hear it in our social world as well. It's just sex. It doesn't mean anything. It's just sex. And we separate two worlds. There's the world that means something and the world that doesn't mean something to that person in some form or fashion. That's just life, or that's just who I am. We will hear it in politics. Well, a person's personal ethics really don't affect their public ethics at all, really. But we've gotten really comfortable with that in the world of politics today, that we can have a person who has a wretched personal life, but we say they can still be a good politician and everything. We're comfortable with that in our world today. That's this particular view. By the way, this compromising dualistic substitute affects the first two that we've looked at, and it's going to affect the last two that we looked at. It's in the middle of this list of these five alternate worldviews because it is affected by and it affects all the others around it. It's in the middle for a reason, and we'll look at that. Then there's an impersonal atheistic substitute. An impersonal, that means God is not a person. Atheistic, there is no God at all. It's impersonal substitute. For instance, you might write down Marxism, M-A-R-X-I-S-M. And another similar thing to what we've looked at before, but naturalism or naturism. I talked about before that there is a blending of pantheism and natural or naturism. We'll talk about that as we go through the semester. You'll see how some of those things start overlapping a little bit. They're both impersonal, but we'll see that. Marxism basically taught this. Some of you are saying, Rick, that is old hat. That is so far gone. That's passé. Don't be so surprised if I don't think it is anymore. This is what Marx taught, and it foundationally, he believed in the foundation of what he taught that history was determinative in the present day world. He talked about history in his writings, and you'll read some of this. He talked about history as being a giant wheel that is rolling through time. It has several cycles to it as it rolls through time. You ever heard of the expression, history repeats itself? You know where that came from? We're going through time and it just keeps coming around over again. He says the key to life, Marx said, is to figure out where the wheel of history is at in its cycle where you live and get on the good side of it so that you're riding it rather than getting rolled over by it. Okay? That's basically what he's saying. He looks at human history. It's impersonal. It's not a person, but it is determinative. It determines what's going to happen in life. Naturalism, you hear it on TV, you read it in things all the time about Mother Nature. Don't mess with Mother Nature. And naturalism believes that there is an impersonal force at work called nature. And it is going to do what it's going to do, and you need to treat it nice, and you need to be on its good side. Very similar to Marxism, only it's nature instead of human history that is determinative, and you better get on its good side. We'll look at that more and more. The last one is a personal atheistic substitute. Sorry for all the big words. We're just about done with all this. A personal atheistic substitute. Right underneath that, Darwinism. And right underneath that, humanism. You have probably heard of most of these words before, like deism and pantheism and Platonism, Marxism, probably naturalism, Darwinism, humanism. You've probably heard of a lot of those terms before. By the time we get to the end of the semester, without you having to become a scholar of any sort in all of this, those are going to be things that make a lot of sense to you as we go through. Because we're going to use a lot of big words. Those are the big words for the whole semester. We're going to go through and we're going to see how they're lived out over and over again in these six questions that we'll cover. Darwinism basically believes, I say there, that it's a personal atheistic substitute. It's personal. It's a personal kind of God, but it's atheistic. It doesn't believe in the God, but it believes in an ultimate personal something. When we talk about Darwinism, what it believes is the ultimate personal force or thing is mankind. You are. You're what's ultimate. It would say it in a general sense that mankind as a whole is at the top of the food chain. We have climbed to the pinnacle of the pyramid of human life, of life on planet Earth, and we are the king of the hill. We've achieved that. But then it goes on and makes the assumption, therefore, every individual person as a human being who's part of that collective is ultimate, is what is ultimate, which is what humanism is. So humanism is sort of a byproduct of Darwinism. Humanism believes I am what is ultimate in the universe. I'm responsible for me and no one else. Have you ever heard any phrases like everything's relative? Comes out of this worldview. You better look out for yourself, because if you don't, nobody else will. Better take care of number one. You're what's important. You deserve a break today. You are what matters. You're number one. That comes out of this particular worldview. Okay, before we go any further, I want you to take a break and flip over a few pages to a very colorful page, okay, that looks like this. We'll come back to where we're at in our notes and wrap up in just a few minutes. You're saying, Rick, you made me write all those words down, and there they are, right there. What is the deal? There is something about remembering what we write that is helpful, so I just wanted you to have the experience at least one time this entire semester of writing those words down. But there they are. You will see on the left-hand side the six issues or the six questions that we're going to be dealing with, and across the top, you will notice those five alternate worldviews that we just looked at. We looked at six. The first one was a biblical worldview that we're going to be looking at the second week each time. But these are the five alternate worldviews from a biblical worldview rather than the biblical worldview. And what I've done in each one of them is give you sort of a summary way of thinking. So as you're going through reading some of this stuff, you might want to go back to this chart. Keep this chart handy to go back and just get, oh yeah, now I remember what an impersonal theistic view is and how it might affect, answer the question of mission and everything. So if you want to get a good summary of things, that's a good page to go to. Okay, keep it handy. Remember where it's at, and you can go back and get some summaries there. I hesitate to take you to that page because some of you are going to try to read that page while I'm trying to talk right now. So anyway, I'll take my chances. Look at number three, responding to the six major issues. The first one of those, issues are questions that we're going to respond to is creation. Where did we come from? And would you write underneath that, this is foundational. This is foundational. These six issues are these six questions that we're going to be going through are not only the six major questions, but they are the six major questions sequentially, reasonably, that we tend to ask. We tend to ask, where did we come from, before we ask, why are we here? If we start asking, why are we here, and we've never answered the question or never dealt with the question, where did we come from, we're going to get very frustrated, and it will force us to go back to the earlier question, where did we come from? Because where we came from gives us clues to why we're here, okay? So why are we here? And then we realize we live in a messed up world. Living here is not easy on planet Earth. There are a lot of problems. So what is evil and where did it come from is a natural next question to ask. And then another natural next question to ask, the fourth one in our sequence is, well, what can be done about evil? Are we just stuck with it? What can be done about evil? Okay, you get the idea of the sequence that we're going through here? That's the kind of thing that we're looking at. The next one would be, can we change? I've been messed up by this evil world. Can I change? And then the last one, obviously, is the last question. How does life relate to death? How does death relate to life? How are those related? What is it? What's going on here? Okay, so you don't have to write all these down, but let me just give you some of the things. Under creation on page 2 there, were we created by God? Did we evolve out of the primordial ooze? Have we existed eternally some form? Do we really exist? All of those would be some of the kinds of offspring questions that we might have under creation. And again, creation is the foundational one because from it, the way a person answers that, if I ask a person and can find out, how do you believe, what do you believe about where we came from? If I can understand what a person believes about that, I can almost tell you the answer to the next questions, the rest of the five questions. I can get real close to answering them the way they would answer them. And so can you when we get there. You'll find that out. They're very reasonable, logical. They follow one another, these arguments. The thing about every worldview is, again, it's not only got a bit of truth in it, but there's a certain sense of logic or reason to every one of these worldviews. They make sense if you assume what they assume from the beginning. If you make the assumptions they make, then it's pretty reasonable to come to the conclusions they come to. So we'll look at that. Under mission, why are we here? Are we here to fulfill God's purposes and plans for our lives? Are we here to make this world a better place for the future, for future generations? Are we here to keep our species at the top of the food chain? Are we here just to exist and then die? Under evil, what is evil and where did it come from? Are good and evil opposites? These are some of the issues we're going to deal with as we go through each of these. Are good and evil opposites? Did God create evil or where did it come from? Has evil always existed? Does evil really exist today? Is it a real thing? Or is it just something we've made up in our minds? Under liberation, what can be done about evil? Has and or will God deal with evil in some form or fashion in the future? Is there anyone or anything stronger than evil? If we work together, can we defeat evil? Can evil be defeated? Have we all been deluded to even believe that there is such a thing as evil? And there's a variety of answers to every one of those kinds of questions that we'll be looking at. Transformation. Can and how do we change? Is it true that I can't change who I am? Am I just who I am and that's it? Do I just need to be following my natural instincts, just doing what comes natural? Hey, God gave me these urges. Should I just follow through on them? I hear that's true. I've read that before. Is that what I should do? Should I just be true to myself? Should I just listen to my inner gut? Mortality. How does death relate to life? Do I go someplace when I die? Is there a place called heaven or hell? Do I just cease to exist? Do I come back as something or someone else in the future? How does that work? How does death relate to life? And there are brilliant, brilliant people who have answered all of these questions in very different ways. Many of them have answered them very differently than the Bible does. There is not an issue, there's not one of these questions we're going to look at this semester that if you went to school or you're in school today, I don't care if it's kindergarten, through university, through grad school, I don't care if you have or you will or are going to school. Every one of these questions are going to be raised and answered in your classroom along the way. They will be sometimes very subtle in the way that they're presented, but you're going to see them over and over and over again. And you're going to hear some very common themes that, again, are very different than what the Bible teaches on these. Okay, what can you do to get the most out of this class? There on page 3, the bottom of page 3. I've mentioned the book by Nancy Piercy. Some of you would say, I'm not a reader, and it is a long book, okay? It's not the kind of book you pick up for leisurely reading and flip through it in a couple hours. It's a very good book. It's a lengthy book. It's a book that goes into deep subjects, but does it in a way that is pretty clear in everyday language that we can understand for the most part, okay? For the most part. So I would encourage you, if you want to get the very most out of this class, I would encourage you to get that book and read through as much as you can. If you want to get the most out of it, read each chapter each week as we assign them, and it will get even more out of this class. Secondly, you have a notebook full of resources. Some people mentioned today when they came in and got their notebook, oh, it's smaller this time. Some of you will come up to me after a week or two and say, it's smaller, but it's harder to read some of this stuff. Because some of the things in there, again, I'm taking you to the original sources, and there are some of these things. I'm not giving you a whole lot to read, but some of what you will read will be more challenging than your typical novel that you're used to picking up and reading or whatever you're picking up to read. And I'm not asking you to read anything I haven't read, okay? But I'm just telling you that would be a great thing to do. The people I've asked you to read, every one of them are an influencer in our world today. I would be willing to say every one of them, their beliefs about life and their answers to some of these questions, every one of them, every one of the people you're going to read will show up every day. If a person watched TV all day long, they would see every one of these show up. If you went to one class of in the university day, any class you chose in a major secular university day, you would hear all of these views All of these people probably referred to in that class. You would. So we're going to be reading from Plato. Plato's from 400 BC, and then we're going to skip ahead about 2,100 years to 1700 AD. And all the rest of the people you'll be reading are from the 1700s on that are affecting our world today. Voltaire, Locke, Hume, Kant, Hegel, Marx, Sartre, Darwin, and B.F. Skinner, all among others that we'll be looking at that are influencing our world today. Can I encourage you, if you want to get the most out of this class, don't drop out because I've used a lot of big words today. Okay? That's not going to help you at all. I promise you, this is, I don't know how many times I've gone through this class now, this 14-week class, but I have yet to have a person who went through it who, most of whom didn't begin by saying, I don't know, this is probably going to be over my head. And all of whom, I haven't had one person come back to me saying, that wasn't one of the best things I've ever done. Okay? It's not because I'm teaching it, it's because of the material. It's because when we look at it for what it is, side by side, it's amazing how it just blows our minds, how it makes us see things we've not seen before from a different perspective than we've ever done before. Okay? So, the Peace Corps used to have a slogan. I don't think they still do today. Maybe they do still. It may still be hanging around. The Peace Corps used to advertise all the time, it'll be the hardest job you'll ever love. This may be the hardest class you will ever love. Okay? I don't know for sure, but it may be for some of you. Not hard because it's over your head. It's because it's going to make us think about things we haven't thought about in a long time, if ever. We've just assumed so many things. Remember that? Worst enemy you can have is the one you don't see, or the worst enemy you can have is the one you see all the time and you just start taking it for granted. And that's what a lot of us have done. We've started taking the world's view for granted, even though we think we're above that. We will realize this semester in a deep, penetrating way for most of us, and for me too. Every time I go through this, it's very convicting. It makes me look at myself all over again, but it's going to make us look at things in our lives we haven't looked at in a long time. That's what will be hard, more than anything else about this class, but that's good. That's really helpful. That can help renew our minds so that our lives can be transformed and not molded into this world. Okay? Now then, here's what I want you to do. Next week, you can, if you're going to get the book, Nancy Piercy's book, I'd encourage you to get it. Go on Amazon. You can get used copies of it if you don't want to spend much money, if you want it. But I would encourage you to look at that. Just look at it. Behind tab 2, there is there are some reading materials there in your notebook. Behind tab 2, The Humanist Manifesto, okay? This is Humanist Manifesto 2. The original Humanist Manifesto was put together by a bunch of scholars from around the world who believed in humanism, who believed that you and I, you are ultimate. You are the ultimate in your life. You're not accountable to anyone. And I've given this to you straight from the horse's mouth. You want to see it. This is 1933 was the first one. This one was done in 1960-something. When is it? 73. Okay. In 1973. And then there is a Humanist Manifesto 3 is the next page, just one page as well. There is a letter in here written from Thomas Jefferson to William Short, a personal letter from Thomas Jefferson that you will read, a one-page letter. And then there is our Declaration of Independence, part of it. and with things underlined that I would like you to read that. And then there is a one paragraph from Charles Darwin that I'd like you to read. Then you come to your notes that we're going to be starting on next week, creation, where do we come from, considering alternate worldviews. We will start every class the next 12 weeks, looking at a person. We're not going to spend a lot of time on them, but we will look at a person in history, one of these influencers, and get to know a little bit more about their life. So that as you're reading some of their stuff, they're a person and not just a name. But you know a little bit about their history, their background, some of the things that shaped what they believed, and that sort of thing. And then we will go into looking at these views. So any of that you want to read, you can, but we will cover that briefly, the philosopher or theologian or whoever it is, in a few minutes, and then we'll go through the rest of the notes for next class. That's what we'll do then. Okay, any questions now? At all, about anything. What happens to the papers that you write? I read them all, but it's probably going to take me most of the summer to get to them all. Because there's one of me and a lot of you, okay? And but I just like to keep them. If I'm ever going to quote them, I will ask you for permission. So. But I haven't done that yet. So anyway, but you might write a real winner that I want to use. So I don't know. Yes, sir.
It seems like the Truth Project would be a good resource.
Truth Project is a good source. It really is. It really is. That's another one. That will take even more time, but yes, that is a good source. The Truth Project. There are a lot of good sources. I'll tell you what, if you have some recommended resources, why don't you send me an email or give me a note or something with those on there. I'll filter them if I need to or whatever, but I'll go through them, make sure we don't have duplicates. I'll add a few of my own, and I'll just give you a page that has some other recommended resources on it, okay? As well. Now, we have some distinguished students in here this semester. This is the first time, but we have four seminary students in here who are taking this for credit. But they're doing a little bit more work than you are for that credit, but they are going to be doing this. So anyway, good to have them in here. Good to have all of you here. If there's nothing else, let me close in prayer, and then I got something else to tell you. Father, thank you so much. For who you are. I feel like I've babbled on a lot tonight, but I pray that you would use this semester to help us get more clarity on ways that we have been molded by this world around us. Help our minds to be renewed so that we can be transformed out of that mold and more into your likeness, into your image as you designed us. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. One of the things we try to do in here, I will try to be done by 7:45. That gives another half an hour for the 2 hours of the class for you to discuss some things that are, there's a little sheet on each one of the tables. There may be some more sheets somewhere else if you are sitting somewhere and don't have those questions. If you could come in around some of these tables, that would be great. And let's have some discussion around the things we talked about tonight. And encourage you to just consider this is a 6:15 to 8:15. That discussion is going to be very valuable for many of you. How many of you have been in here before? How many of you have been in here before feel like the discussions have been helpful? Okay. A bunch of you. Not everybody stayed, but anyway, but thank you. I sort of put you on the spot, didn't I? Anyway, I think those discussions have been helpful. Yes?
For, like, I'm part of a life group,
We can do that. Yes, we can do that. Yeah, good point. We do. We are recording this, and the recording. Usually, when we start off a semester, it takes usually a good week or two before the first one comes up, and then they get on track after a few weeks, and it'll be up every week. Patty will send you an email. Be sure and sign in at the front if you didn't when you came in, so we have your email, so we can email you and let you know about that. We're not going to bombard you with a lot of stuff, but it's helpful for us to have your email so we can get you information about this class, so I can send you that one sheet, one page of extra resources so that you have it and that sort of thing. And also so Patty can send you information about where you can go to the video that's online. It also will also include the discussion questions with that as well. It's also helpful for us if we have your email, because if for some reason we have to cancel class, if we get snowed out, okay, or whatever can happen, if something happens and we have to cancel class, which I've had to do before for whatever reason, if that were to ever happen, we just want to be able to let as many of you know as possible so you don't make an extra trip for nothing and everything. But anyway, okay, any other questions, comments at all? Yes? Do we podcast them? They are a... Right. They are, let me tell you why. And I didn't go over this in the beginning, but a lot of the materials in here are taken from copyrighted sources. A lot of materials in your notebook. And I will make reference to them or read from them in class at times. They're in your notes. They're quotes and that sort of thing in your notes. I have the privilege, the ability, the freedom, the right to use those in a classroom setting. I cannot publish them or make that sort of stuff available to the whole world. But if you're part of the class, I can make them available to you. So that's why we do it the way we do, to where we send you a link that you can go to and watch the podcast of this class. So the last hour and a half, there will be a podcast of this class that you can go to and get it, but she'll send you the link to that, just because we need to keep it in class for legal reasons. We need to do that. Does that make sense?
It's like music
as well. Huh?
Sort of like music as well.
Yes, it is. It is. Mm-hmm.
Last semester, I took them by a podcast.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder if there's any discussion about possibly creating an online discussion forum, sort of like a virtual class, if you will, if that would be a possibility for the future, so that we wouldn't miss out on, you know, some of these after class discussions.
That's I've had a couple of people mention that before, and I think that's a good idea. Let me see what I can find out about how hard that would be for someone to put that together and everything. Because I have no idea how to put it together. But anyway, talk about getting over your head. I'd be way over my head trying to put something like that together. But yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. Mm-hmm.
In mid-March, it's looking like I have to miss two of the classes.
Uh-huh.
Do you just go ahead and do the work on your own?
Yes, that would be the ideal. For you to listen to the podcast that you'll get the link for, and everything, and take your notes and do that sort of thing on your own. Yeah, that's good questions. Anything else? Yes, way back there. Yes. Okay, you are assigned to this table right down here, okay? Can you raise your hand? right down here. Some other girls? Listen, there are most of the tables are only half full because nobody wanted to sit with their back to me. So those of you sitting in chairs, really come up and find some friendly faces and sit around and get engaged in the discussion, or turn where you're at and do that. I'm afraid we may not have gotten enough of those questions out there this week. So you might have to go to a table to get the questions. Uh-huh.
Can we project them on the screen in the future?
We can do that. We can do that, I think. Can we do that back there? Yeah, we can do that. Okay, lots of great ideas, suggestions. Okay, by the way, the reason I'm not assigning everybody around tables like we did in the past is because I also got some people who said they would just soon go where they want to go rather than where I told them to go. So for you, I'm telling you where you go, but everybody else can go wherever they want to. Okay. Have a good discussion. We'll see you next week.